Hi, I'm Ben Saylor from Urology Times. I'm here at the 2026 AUA annual meeting, and it's my privilege to be interviewing Dr. Michael Stifelman, professor and chair of urology at Hackensack Meridian Health. Dr. Stifelman, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Absolutely, pleasure.
So let's get right into it. We're going to be talking about surgical OPIs. And, you know, to start off with, could you kind of give us an overview of what objective performance indicators are in the context of robotic surgery, and why you see them as a meaningful advance over how surgical quality and outcomes have traditionally been evaluated?
Great question. And I think it's, quite frankly, a black box that we have never been able to tap into really since the beginning of surgery, right? Like, when we think about what does good surgery look like, there was never a objective way to quantify it. And for the first time in the history of surgery, we actually have this new technology that can objectively quantify what we're doing. And so what Intuitive Surgical has done is they've been able not only to take a surgical video and processing it with artificial intelligence, break it into certain steps, but then on top of that, they've taken each of those steps and they put in what we call objective performance indicators, about 150 different metrics that are captured by the robot during that part of the surgery. So things such as how many times you move your camera, how much energy you deliver, the force of tissue that you put at different parts of that operation, the smoothness of your instrument, how often you move your fourth arm, and the list goes on. There's about over 150 of them. And so now, you know, there's that saying, you know, if you can't measure it, you can't fix it. This is the first time we can measure what we are doing during surgery. So now we can really quantify it and really work to improve it with a lot more science behind it and a lot more objectivity.
That's incredible. So the premise of this work is that the OPI data captured during robotic surgery can predict how a patient will do postoperatively. What would you say you've learned so far about which indicators are most predictive of clinical outcomes, and how reliable are those signals?
Yeah. You know, Ben, we are at the tip of the iceberg here. You know, we are literally just starting to use this technology. And so I would say what we have right now are signals. I wouldn't call them, you know, I wouldn't hang my hat on them. But what we've started to learn, and I think is very exciting, as we put all our preoperative and postoperative data from specifically prostatectomy, we put over 100 patients in, at which we had pre and postoperative data. And we use this algorithm, this machine learning algorithm, to help us predict sexual function as well as continence. And we're seeing, number one, the signals are what part of the operation is most important. Like, we thought we knew what the parts of the operation were, but we never were able to quantify it. And it's coming, you know, to fruition that the things that we thought were important, you know, the steps of the operation thought were important are actually coming to fruition. So, for example, what helps sexual function? Left neurovascular bundle, right neurovascular bundle, and the posterior dissection. We thought it knew that, but now we can prove it. Then we go into those steps and we look at what is being done during those steps that are helping prove the function. And that's where I would say we're sort of at the tip of the iceberg and seeing signals. But some of the signals that are, you know, percolating up and we're seeing over and over again are, number one, the tissue force we're putting. Less force of tissue is going to give us better sexual function, return to sexual function. The more smooth we are with our scissors, which is probably a surrogate endpoint of how well the surgeon knows the system and works on and experience, is showing that. And then energy, how much energy we're applying. So we're starting to see some OPIs started to percolate up, which appear to be going or giving us some signals that when we do these certain steps or we avoid these certain things, these OPIs, we can improve both sexual and urinary continence. But I think we're going to need a lot more data. We're going to need a lot more help from other institutions to really validate this and get to the source. But it is exciting. And to use a word that's often overused, I would argue transformative, because it is the first time in the history of surgery that we have objective data that can point to what is the right way to do the surgery that could produce certain outcomes and what is maybe not as good and may produce worse outcomes. That, to me, is really exciting for surgeons.
100%. You know, for decades, surgical feedback has been largely subjective. You know, peer opinion, video review, mentorship conversations. What would you say is lost in that model? And what does an objective, data-driven layer actually add that surgeons cannot get any other way?
Yeah. I mean, I feel in some ways you answered the question with the question, right? So, you know, it's subjective, right? And so we all come into this with our own biases. There, you know, I may like to, you know, use clips, and someone may like to use energy. Someone like to, you know, use the one arm to push laterally. Some may want to push it anteriorly. And then so we go and we see that surgery and we say, oh, that's not a good way to do it because it's not the way I do it, right? And so you have all that subjectivity. We try things like crowdsourcing, that we're going to use a gear score, and we're going to give it to 50 or 60 people out on the internet to score it, and we're going to use that. But they really haven't panned out. And I think the big difference here, these are objective indicators that have the same definitions no matter who's doing the surgery, and they're measurable. And I think when you have those pieces in place, objectivity, measurability, and defined, you know, tasks and defined objective definitions that are applicable to every surgeon, you get rid of all that subjectivity, and you're now using real hard data to understand surgery. And again, you know, that to me is opening up a box that is going to allow all of us as surgeons, not to just someone like myself who's done a lot of surgery to improve, but think about for the trainees. Think about for the surgeon that just came out a year or two ago, you know, and they can start not only compare their video to someone else, but they can actually compare their data and say, hey, this is the way I'm doing it. This is the way this person I want to emulate is doing it. I can get there faster. And that is, to me, going to really change, I think, the way not only we do surgery, we teach surgery, but it's also going to exponentially, I believe, have the potential to improve patient outcomes.
How is the Case Insights platform being integrated into the workflow at Hackensack? And what is the practical experience of using it taught you that the design phase didn't anticipate?
So that's a great, you know, so what is it, what are we, how are we using it? I'll start with that. Like, how are we using these OPIs at Hackensack? So every single week, I meet with my resident and we pick a very specific part of the operation that we want to go over. And we spend 30 minutes every week where they have their laptop open, I have my laptop open, and we go through that part of the operation, the video, so what they're doing, what they look like compared to me, and then we layer on top of that the OPIs. And what some of the things we've learned, and this is really kind of universal for almost all our residents, is that our residents are not clutching the camera enough, they're not moving around, they're not moving their fourth arm enough, and they're applying a lot more energy than the attendings. And so, you know, it's not, now we're able to pick a very specific part of the operation, review it with them, which before this would have taken at least 40, 50 minutes just to get the video up. Now it's done in seconds. So it's really much more easier for us to access and to scale. And we're then finding that they're not only by reviewing the video, but by look, we're seeing certain areas that we can help push them towards simulation exercises. Simulation exercises that help them move the camera more. Simulation exercises that help them engage the fourth arm more. Simulation exercises that help them with working on their energy. So, you know, and how they apply it. And we're seeing those folks that are now using this platform and who are engaging in it, they seem to be learning the surgery faster, and their outcomes are look better. So that's how we're using it. I think what we didn't expect was it's hard to get surgeons to do this, right? And I would have expected that every surgeon would want to do this and was excited about doing this with the residents. And I will say it's been more of pushing the surgeons to make sure they do it and giving them some ownership on it than I would expect it. So I think it's a cultural change, maybe. It is an extra step in their day. And I think is the better we can figure out ways to integrate it in their workflow of their regular day, which doesn't sort of get them jammed up, the more they get comfortable using the platform, I think the more we're going to embrace it.
surgical education is one of the most compelling applications of this technology. How do you envision OPI-driven feedback changing the training experience for residents and fellows? And what does personalized data-informed coaching really look like in practice?
So those are two different questions, right? Like, how are we going to use this to help train and really, you know, evaluate our residents? And then how will we use this when I say coaching and practice? To me, that means how we're going to use this for surgeons who are just getting out of practice. And I think that sort of remains to be seen. But I do think there is that potential here now that we can start to use this objectively to evaluate our trainees, right? We always, when you fill out a form for a trainee, and as many of us do, it's usually a Likert score, and it is, can they do this independently? Can they do this with a little assistance? They need some assistance, or they just can't do this at all, right? And that's where we are. That's subjective, right? And there are, you know, there are unconscious and conscious biases that go into that. There's, do I like this person? Do I trust this person? Do I, you know, maybe I didn't like the presentation they had, so I have this first impression that they're not going to be good. Unfortunately, no matter how hard we try, all of us evaluate people with some conscious, unconscious bias. This takes it out of the game. This makes it very objective. It can be blinded. It does. You don't even have to, you know the person. You just look at the data. And so I think that's going to be really helpful. And I think it's going to be very helpful for the trainee as well, because they know that the evaluation they're getting is objective and that there is no bias behind it. So I think it's really going to change the way we teach surgery. In terms of, you know, what I would call transitioning surgeons, surgeons that have left their residency, left their fellowship and starting practice, this is an opportunity for them to really start that lifelong learning process of constantly evaluating what they're doing, how they're doing it, how they can get better. And I think the more that we offer them examples of surgeons who have shared their data and have good data, and they can emulate the surgeon that they want, and the more they can see and collect their own data, right, to see how their changes that they're doing are improving outcomes, the more excited they're going to get about it. And I think we're going to have, you know, I would hope that over the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, all surgeons would want to interact with this technology, because it's going to allow them to deliver better patient care. And at the end of the day, Ben, that's what this is all about, right? We want to get the best outcomes for our patients. And this is one opportunity, and I think a big opportunity, to make that happen.
That's terrific, thank you. There are legitimate questions about how OPI data should be governed, you know, who owns it, who can access it, how it should be used in credentialing or performance review. How are you thinking through those considerations?
When we first turned this on, the surgeon's first question was that, right? Who governs this data? Who owns this data? And is it discoverable, right? Like, are they going to be able to take my video and use it as discovery? And I think there's a lot of layers of the onion that need to get peeled back to understand that. And again, I think that's an area that really requires you to bring all the stakeholders in to discuss this. Okay, this isn't a decision that you and I would make, or a surgeon would make, or even one administrator would make. When we got this platform, we brought in our compliance team, our legal team, our IT team, our strategy team, our clinical experts, and our OR periop team. And we got around a table and said, how are we gonna use this? Who owns the data? Are we gonna use this for OPPE? Are we gonna, you know, to credential people? Are we gonna use this for re-credentialing? Are we gonna use this for people who maybe go on FPPE? How are we gonna use this? And what we decided now, and this is where we are today, and it may change over time, but we decided now is that we are gonna use this under a under a PSO, which is a patient safety organization. And when things are go under a PSO, it's all about to be used for quality improvement, for performance improvement. And that's the only way that we use it now. So it sits under a PSO. It is not used, we are not using it yet for credentialing, for re-credentialing, for FPPE, for OPPE. We are not using it during, you know, complication rounds or performance improvement rounds. We're using it only for the purpose of letting surgeons develop their skills more quickly. And so because of that, when we stick to that, it cannot be discoverable. It's very hard to get discoverable. Number two is there is the issue of, well, could someone ask for the data? Could someone ask for the video? And as of now, it is the hospital owns the video, you know, has sort of the governance of that, and it's the surgeon that has the governance of the data. And they are ways that you can just not use it if you choose not to. They are looking at mechanisms that we can delete it after, say, 30 days or 90 days or 100 days. So there's a lot of different things that are being developed as we sort of build the plane as we fly it. But I think as the initial start, we have chosen to govern it under a PSO specifically for performance improvement to limit our risk and liability of discoverability. But that may change with time.
Where do you see this technology in 5 to 10 years? And do you believe that OPI-based analytics will eventually become a standard component of surgical quality programs across urology and other specialties?
I believe this is going to be a stepping stone to help us get to the point of augmented surgery, you know, or augmented dexterity, you know, where now that we know or starting to learn what good looks like, and now that we can start to put, when you do this, you get a good outcome. When you don't do this, you get a bad outcome. There may be the potential that during the surgery, we can start to inform the surgeon in real time, hey, that's too much pressure. You know, a warning box, almost like a lane departure, right? Or, hey, you've fired your energy 73 times during this neurovascular bundle dissection. You're approaching your limit, you know, like a baseball player, a pitcher, you know, when they hit 100, it's probably a good time to change them out. And I think that that's where I believe it's going to be used for. So it's going to be used both for self-reflection and improvement. And I think we're going to get a lot of out of that now. But I think where it's headed in 5 years is we're going to be able to, rather than do it post-procedure, we're going to do it intraoperatively and use the data to help us, you know, in terms of augmented dexterity, augmented knowledge, and in real time. And I think that's going to be the next step.
Amazing. Well, this has been a pleasure, Dr. Stifelman.
Thank you
so much for your time.
Ben, thank you.
Yeah.